This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of May 29th, 2022. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 240. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. The Is It Just Me commentary. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And the big deal feature. The former Speaker of the BC Legislature and his former Chief of Staff, Daryl Plekis, and Alan Mellon join the Breaker.News podcast for an exclusive interview to offer their reaction to the conviction of ex-clerk Craig James. But first, is it just me? Is it just me, or is the era of sports globalization dying? Last week, the Canadian Soccer Association bowed to pressure from John Horgan and Justin Trudeau and canceled the June 5th BC Place friendly versus Iran. Soccer Canada was going to pay the Iranian national team a $400,000 appearance fee. Meanwhile, the families of those killed on a Ukraine Airlines jet in 2020 by an Iranian missile wait for compensation. Trudeau and Horgan hold the key to funding 2026 World Cup matches in Canada, and that funding envelope won't be decided until later this year. Sports and politics and economics go hand in hand in hand. Don't let anyone fool you. Case in point, the grotesque spectacle that was the Beijing 2022 Winter Olympics. That's where Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin declared each other best friends forever. Putin used the pause between the end of the Olympics and the start of the Paralympics to invade Ukraine. So much for the Olympic truce. Which might make it more difficult to host an Olympics in 2030 should Vancouver make a formal bid. Right now, it's looking like a long shot. As I reported last week in the Breaker.News, the Horgan NDP government has offered no financial support to the Canadian Olympic Committee and four host First Nations who are studying the bid. Meanwhile, Horgan has his fingers crossed that FIFA chooses BC Place for five matches in 2026, and that he can convince British Columbians that his new billion-dollar Royal BC Museum is a good idea. All of this may be moot because Salt Lake City is a year ahead of Vancouver's bid, and they definitely want it more. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. This is the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast.
I will say that I'm grateful that a very sad chapter in this institution's history has now been put to rest.
That is the voice of BC Premier John Horgan reacting on May 19th to the conviction in BC Supreme Court of Craig James.
It was a difficult time for the people who work here, British Columbians who are passionate and committed to our institutions of democracy, who make this place accessible for countless British Columbians who come to visit to see our democracy in action. And it was definitely a blow to all of those who care about this place. The courts have made their determination, and I'll leave it to them to determine what judgments will flow from that.
The former clerk of the BC Legislature was found guilty of fraud and breach of trust by a public official. James spent almost $1,900 of taxpayers' money to buy himself suits and dress shirts from upscale boutiques in London and Vancouver. James will be back in front of Associate Chief Justice Heather Holmes on the 4th of July for a sentencing hearing. The verdict was a major milestone in the corruption scandal at the BC Legislature. The story that dominated BC News at the end of 2018 and the start of 2019. We would never have known without the efforts of Daryl Plekis and his Chief of Staff, Alan Mellon, who took evidence to the RCMP. On May 25th, I met with former Speaker Daryl Plekis and Alan Mellon in Abbotsford to get their reaction to the verdict and hear their reflections on the last 5 years. I started by asking Daryl Plekis for his reaction.
You know, that process, we have full respect for that process. We have full respect for the judge's decision. It's not for us to decide whether or not he was guilty. I mean, that's the responsibility of the court. So, you know, people ask us, you know, how we feel about it. Well, in one sense, of course, we're somewhat relieved, but I think on that front, it's more than anything, it's not so much that we personally cared whether or not he was found guilty, but it was the way the response was all along the way and after the trial to the whole issue. And that is, look, this is basically, from many corners, this is not such a big deal. You know, people making comments like, oh, he was only convicted of one thing. Well, we go back to our concern in the first place. You cannot have people who are in their positions, they were in the most senior positions at the legislature, behaving in a manner which is a clear breach of trust. And I'm reminded that, you know, we ultimately called for an investigation, despite enormous resistance for an investigation of Gary Lenz under the Police Act. He was found guilty under the Police Act of being negligent of duty and for discreditable conduct. And that discreditable conduct included his, as the investigator described it, being an egregious breach of trust. He lied to the former Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Canada about matters that were being investigated at the ledge. He lied to the investigator about the activities that were going on. And so at the end of the day, here we have Gary Lenz, who is found guilty of the most serious charge a police officer can be charged with under the Police Act. And, you know, people don't seem to take that very seriously. Well, of course it's serious, because you can't have a situation as we had at the ledge where you say, gee, we think there's wrongdoing, and you can't get the police at the ledge to investigate. You can't get the police at the ledge to take seriously the manner in which they're conducting their operations. And fortunately, Alan, you know, felt so serious about it that he conducted his own inquiry into spending of the security at the ledge and found that they were burning through over $1 million a year that they didn't have to burn through.
I also asked Alan Mullen about his reaction to the verdict.
Well, of course you feel good that justice was served, but then that's taken over with sort of sadness, but more concern. I look back on the last 3-4 years and I think the resistance that we got at every turn, whether it was by elected officials, whether it was by appointed officials, whether it was by the media, it's madness. And all we said was, there's something not right here. There's something going on that just doesn't seem right. We think some of it, like Daryl has referenced, some of it is criminal, some of it is sort of a policy issue, but there's something not right, and we need to, you know, have a look at this, and we need to do better. This is the people's house, as we've said all along. And at every turn, it was stop right there, nothing to see here. You know, as the former leader of the opposition, Andrew Wilkinson, said, stop this, shut it down, there's no, you know, stop the madness. It doesn't make sense. And you're exactly right, Bob. In 2012, the Auditor General's report was, this is not being managed properly, and nothing was done. You know, throughout this process, during this inquiry, Daryl and I brought information of wrongdoing to the then Auditor General, and we were told to go away. This is an institutional problem. And to suggest, like it has been suggested in the past week by current sitting members of the BC Legislature, that this closes a chapter, you know, for a dark time of the legislature, I say it doesn't close anything. It does not close until these policies and procedures are in place. That place should be a glass house where everybody can look in and say, it's our house, we know what's going on. Nobody knows what's going on. There is no oversight whatsoever. And you know, people will say, well, yes, there is. There's these committees, or there's LAMSI. All they do is they go in camera when they talk about something they don't want, they want publicized. And, you know, if somebody wants to raise something, they're not gonna, because they're gonna look at Daryl Plekis and Alan Mullen and say, well, why would I do that? Why would I go through what those two gentlemen went through? They had the boots put to them. And furthermore, I'll look back to my colleagues, you know, who were fired for asking questions. There is an institutional problem here, and it doesn't just get fixed because Craig James has been removed, or Gary Lenz has been removed, or because, you know, a sitting minister says the chapter is closed. The chapter is not closed. There's a many, many more chapters here, and the public want more. This is just the beginning of, we need to do better. This is public money, and this is the public institution. We need to do better.
This is the Breaker.News podcast, and you're listening to my exclusive interview with former BC Legislature Speaker Darrell Plekis and his former Chief of Staff Alan Mullen. During the trial of Craig James from late January to early March, the court heard about the 2012 Auditor General's report. The system was broken before Plekis became Speaker. I asked what needs to be done to fix the legislature after the damage done by Craig James.
Number one, what caused this to happen in the first place? You know, we want to remember that when we talk about a wood splitter, we talk about the trailer, you know, we talk about the $257,000 payment. Those things occurred before we got there. Like, it wasn't that we were saying, oh, gee, we saw this. We were responding to complaints coming to us from current staff, former staff. And what were we to do? Of course, there would be an expectation, at least from taxpayers, and nobody at the ledge would care, but the public would certainly care, that there would be some accounting of this. And even to this day, it's not clear that that's going to happen yet. I'm reminded that Chief Justice, or retired Chief Justice McLaughlin, said that Craig James was basically not entitled to the money. She said there was no legal basis for the payment. In the current case, Chief Justice Holmes commented that he was likely not eligible for the money. So maybe he was, at the end of the day, it was okay for him to have the money. The point is that what we know at this point is that it's not clear that he was. Never mind whether or not it was criminal. As Associate Chief Justice Holmes pointed out, he was in a clear conflict of interest in accepting that money. So at least somebody should be saying now, well, let's just look at it from a taxpayer's point of view. You know, what about that money? Why isn't there some inquiry as to whether or not that money, he should receive it, or should it be paid back? And again, I'm not talking about criminality. He was found to not have done anything criminal on that matter. That's fine. Again, I go back to our original thing on that. Whether or not he was, from our first perspective, it wasn't for us to say whether or not it was criminal. Our view was that it was inappropriate. And to this day, that still seems to be the case. It wasn't an appropriate payment. So, there, you know, the whole issue of what to... You know, what can be done? You know, we've heard from people at the legislature that there's been all manner of policy changes. Well, yes, there has. You know, we were yelling, Alan and I were yelling and screaming about the need for greater transparency, oversight, better control over expenditures. And many of those, to the credit of the staff at the ledge, have been put in place. But there's still some incredibly important matters which haven't been dealt with, and that's the whole matter of freedom of information and the access of people to find out what's going on decisions. And then, of course, there's the whole matter, as we had a concern about from the beginning and have repeatedly requested that something be done about it, and that's a policy with respect to whistleblowers. The government has a policy with regard to whistleblowing for government employees. These policies are in place all over the world, but for some reason they haven't seen fit to have them in place for legislative employees.
I asked Alan Mullen if there were any surprises. Was there anything in the testimony, the evidence, anything that he wasn't expecting?
I mean, obviously, I knew the defense was going to do their job, the prosecution was going to do their job, and there'd be a lot of, you know, sort of witnesses and documentation and evidence flowing back and forth. But for people to get on the stand and just lie point blank, that was a huge surprise to me. But again, it's the same thing as we see always. Nobody's asking why. Nobody's asking, you know, if I'm the media or I'm an MLA, I'm an elected member of that place, all through this, I'm going to stand up and I'm going to say, well, why is this happening? Why are the three House leaders signing a secret document on behalf of British Columbians with Craig James to basically let him walk out with no accountability, and then it's secret and nobody can ever talk about it? Why is nobody standing up either in the media or in the House or anywhere else saying, why did that happen? Why did the Sergeant at Arms shut down an investigation that was brought to him by myself and a political staffer, a whistleblower in effect, about some serious allegations against a sitting member? That was brought to Gary Lenz and his deputy, Randy Ennis, and that investigation was shut down 2 hours later. Why does nobody stop and say, excuse me, can you explain this? No, it's the massive brush and the rug and sweep it under it.
This cost millions of dollars to investigate and prosecute. What will it take to finally force permanent change at the legislature? Does there have to be another scandal?
How is it that so many people can sit on committees? The Legislative Management Committee could sit there for a decade plus, could not possibly have not been aware of these failings and not do anything about it. Remember, the only time things changed is when I said, that's it, things are going to change here, whether you like it or not. It's certainly not a good way to do business, but when you're up against this wall of people not wanting to do anything, and then you go to the police at the ledge, remember, are not independent. That's complicated because, you know, they could basically say, as they did in several different cases, say, I don't care what you want, we're just not investigating, regardless of how serious it is. So how can you operate under that kind of arrangement? And it's my understanding that situation at the ledge is still the same, with all due respect to whoever might be the current sergeant at arms. He reports to the clerk, and that's not to say anything untoward about the clerk, but in principle, it's fundamentally wrong. Where else on the planet, in the Western world anyway, in a democracy, would you have a police chief who is reporting directly to another employee? That's just completely inappropriate. So you've got that problem, and then you have the problem of the media, who you would say, gee, you know, aren't these people, these journalists, supposed to be there as investigators of sorts, questioning what's going on? Well, in this case, there was certainly a few, and certainly you being one of them, who said all along, well, gee, there needs to be an investigation here. But that was few and far between. For the most part, people were saying, go away. In fact, it was worse than that. They said, how dare you? This was the media saying, how dare you even suggest that these two people shouldn't be here? The focus went from, gee, there may be something wrong here. And immediately it went to, no, there was nothing wrong on their behalf. It was Mr. Mullen who was at fault and the speaker who was at fault. You're the ones who should be removed. And when you have that kind of a situation, and we say that there's not fundamental problems here, of course there is. There needs to be far more change than we've seen. And I can't tell you how many times I've brought issues forward, Alan has brought issues forward, and they fall on completely deaf ears. It's complete silence. I'll never forget the day. We're talking to the Auditor General, and I'm saying, tell me this isn't fraud. Tell me this isn't fraud. And she just wouldn't listen. The only investigation she did, when I called for an audit, you'll recall that highly publicized comment where I said, you know, if there's an audit and it doesn't make you throw up, well, that audit didn't happen. You know what that audit turned into? That was an audit of my office. That's what she did. It was absolutely disgraceful. And then I would go back again to say, going back to the 2012 auditor's report, what happened to him? What happened to that auditor who raised those concerns? Well, that's it. He left the country. you know, nobody's listening. And the other thing we want to remember about Auditor General's reports, who we all look at Auditor General's report and say, well, there's our fix there. There's our road to get things fixed. Well, find me one. Find me an Auditor General's report that actually came back and said, well, here's an action report that's following up, and here's the accountability. Nobody's ever held accountable. And, you know, right now we have a situation where we have politicians saying, well, you know, it's behind us, it's a dark cloud over us, and thank God it's over with. Well, I can tell you, I mean, Alan could give you 100 stories. There's certain things people need to remember. They haven't heard the half of this.
That was the voice of Daryl Plekis, the former Speaker of the BC Legislature. And that's a good place to push pause. That's the first half of the two-part exclusive interview with Daryl Plekis and Alan Mullen. You'll hear more next week on the Breaker.News podcast. Podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the Taiwan news, alleged leaked audio reveals commanders planning mobilization for war with Taiwan. The 57-minute audio clip was allegedly recorded during a meeting of the Standing Committee of the Provincial Party Committee of Guangdong on May 14th, and it was published by Lude Media on May 23rd. According to the media outlet, this is the first audio recording from a top-secret military meeting in China ever released to the public. The stated main purpose of the meeting, which included members of the People's Liberation Army's Guangdong Military Region, was to convey the instructions of the mobilization order and clarify the instructions on the transition from a peacetime to wartime footing. In the Hong Kong Free Press, Hong Kong's only non-establishment lawmaker still thinking about how to mark Tiananmen crackdown. Tik Chi Yun told reporters at the Legislative Council on Wednesday that his moderate political party, Third Side, would not hold any commemorative events. Every year since 1997, pro-democracy legislators have raised a June 4th motion to not forget the 1989 crackdown. Tik said he would not table the motion this year. A Hong Kong Catholic group said it would not hold masses to commemorate the victims of the crackdown this year. In Kyoto news, U.S. to remain focused on China in the midst of Russia war, says Foreign Minister Blinken. The United States views China as posing the most serious long-term challenge to the international order, said the Secretary of State. China is the only country with both the intent to reshape the international order and, increasingly, the economic, diplomatic, military, and technological power to do it, Blinken added. He criticized the Chinese Communist Party under President Xi Jinping for becoming, quote, more repressive at home and more aggressive abroad, end quote. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, Portland marijuana production blunder sickened more than a dozen. Here's how it happened. Following Curaleaf's labeling blunder, at least a dozen people who thought they were taking benign CBD drops reported becoming ill after ingesting jumbo doses of THC, the psychoactive ingredient in marijuana. At least five customers reported going to the emergency room after taking the mislabeled drops. Two said they were driving when they were incapacitated by an unexpected marijuana high. In King 5, feds stop boat with 1,400 pounds of meth in San Juan Islands. U.S. Customs and Border Protection said officers stopped the 18-foot Bayliner speedboat on Wednesday as it was headed toward Canada. The boat's occupant, identified as an Alberta resident, was arrested and appeared in a Seattle court. The suspect's federal public defender declined to comment. The suspect allegedly told investigators that he had been hiking near a marina in Sydney, BC, on Vancouver Island, when someone approached him and offered him $1,000 to move a boat from Sydney to Anacortes, Washington, and back. In Czech news, newest southern resident killer whale calf is a girl. The Center for Whale Research has announced the newest southern resident killer whale calf, born to the J-pod, is a girl. An encounter with the new calf, J-59, caused staff for the CAWR to determine that she is a female. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to beekeepers and their bees, because the buzz is that May 29th is the day of the honeybee, the popular pollinator that makes life sweeter. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of May 29th, 2022. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 29th of May in 1950, the St. Roch traveled from Halifax to Vancouver via the Panama Canal, the first ship to circumnavigate North America? You can see the ship at the Maritime Museum in Vancouver. It's a National Historic Site since 1962. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.